Chapter 34. Cerberus Hades Orbit, 2566. Corilette Volley over do all the hard work of getting the spider room safely ensconced in the Melancholia. The operation was trickier than it seemed. Not because the body of the spider room was too large to fit the available volume, but because the room's dangling legs refused to fold themselves neatly away, inhibiting closure of the cargo doors. In the end, and it could not have been more than a minute or so after the operation had commenced, Volyova had to send out a squad of servitors to wrestle the legs into position. To an external observer, not that there was one, of course, except the brooding, semi-paralyzed mass of the lighthugger, the procedure must have resembled the team of pixies trying to cram an insect into a jewel box. Finally, Volyova was able to close the doors, blocking out the last narrowing rectangle of twisting starfield from view. Interior lights came on, followed by the rapid, loudening howl of pressurization transmitted through the spider room's metallic hull. The servitors reappeared, quickly clamping the room against drift, and then, not more than a minute later, Volyova showed up, unsuited. "Follow me," she shouted, her voice ringing. "The sooner we're out of weapons range, the better." "How far exactly is weapons range?" Kuri said. "I'm not sure. You hit him with your program," Kuri said, as the three of them pulled themselves hand over hand up to the shuttle's cabin. "Good work, Ilya. We felt it out there. One mother of a shutdown." "I think it hurt him," she said. "After my experience with the cash weapon, I put palsy back into place with a few additional interrupts. This time the paralysis would have reached much more than skin deep, but I wish I'd installed destructive devices around the conjoiner drives. Then we could torch the ship and run. Wouldn't that make it a bit difficult to get home?" "Very probably, but it would certainly put an end to Sunstealer." As an afterthought, she added, "More than that, too. Without the ship, the bridgehead would begin to fail, since there would be no more updates from the Warchive. We'd have won." "Is that the most optimistic outcome you can think of?" Volyova didn't answer. They had reached the flight deck, which Kuri saw was as gratifyingly modern as any she had seen, all white and sterile, like a dentist's operating room. "Listen," Volyova said, looking at Pascal, "I don't know how much of this has sunk in yet, but if the bridgehead should fail now, which is what we want, it wouldn't necessarily be good for your husband."
"Assuming he's reached it yet."
"Oh, I think we can assume that. On the other hand," Kuri said, "if he's already inside, having it fail now wouldn't change anything except to prevent us reaching him." She paused, added, "That is what we're planning, isn't it? I mean, we have to at least try."
"Somebody has to," Volyova said,
already buckling herself into one of the control chairs, reaching across to interface her fingers with the archaic, touch-sensitive control board she affected. "Now, I strongly suggest you find yourself somewhere to sit. We're about to put a lot of space between ourselves and the lighthugger, in not a great deal of time." She had barely finished speaking when the engines came online, howling to readiness, and the previously indeterminately defined walls and floors and ceilings suddenly assumed very concrete reality. When the shaft vanished, and they were dropping through emptiness, the sense of vertical speed suddenly ceasing was so great that Sylvester felt his body tense in expectation of imaginary stress. But it was illusion. They were still falling, faster now than ever, but the points of reference were so much more distant that there was little impression of motion. He was inside Cerberus.
"Well," Calvin said, speaking for what seemed like the first time in days, "is this all you expected?"
"This is nothing," Sylvester said, "just a prelude."
But it was still the strangest artificial structure he had ever seen, the oddest place in which he had ever been confined. The crust curved over him, a world englobing roof pierced by the narrow end of the bridgehead. The place was aglow with its own wan luminescence, seemingly generated by the immense snakes which lay in coiled complexity across what he now thought of as the floor. The huge tree-trunk buttresses reached all the way to the ceiling, gnarled and organic. Now that the view was an improvement on that gained from the robotic probes, he could see that the buttresses looked more as if they had grown out of the ceiling into the floor than the other way around. Their roots blended into the floor,
The firmament looked less alive, more crystalline. In a flash of insight he saw that the floor was older than the ceiling, that the ceiling had been constructed around the world after the floor was already finished. It was almost as if they stemmed from different phases of Amarantine science.
"Check your fall," Sajaki said. "We don't want to hit the floor too quickly, nor do we want to stray into some defense system which the bridgehead hasn't neutralized. You think there might still be hostile elements?"
"Perhaps not on this level," the Triumvir said, "but lower. I believe we can count on it. Such defenses may not, however, have seen much use in the last 1,000,000 years, so they may be rather..." He seemed to have to search for the word.
"Rusty.
On the other hand, maybe we shouldn't count on that, either."
"No, perhaps not."
Suit thrust increased, and with it the feeling of gravity. Only a quarter of a G, yet the vaulted ceiling was still an artifact of terrifying size. There was a kilometer of it between him and open space. A kilometer he would have to get through again if he ever wanted to leave. Of course, there were another 1,000 kilometers of planet below his feet, but he had no idea how far into those depths he would have to tunnel before he found what he was looking for. He hoped it would not be far. The nominal 5 days he had allotted himself for the journey and return now seemed to be cutting it dangerously close to the mark. Seen from outside, it was easy to accept Volyova's equations of gain and loss, and believe that they had some connection to reality. Here, when the forces represented by her equations had crystallized into vast and threatening structures, he had much less confidence in their predictive power.
"You're shit scared, aren't you?" Calvin said.
"You can read my emotions now. Is that it?"
"No, it's just that your emotions ought to mirror mine. We think very similarly, you and I. More so than ever now."
Calvin paused, "and I don't mind admitting. I'm very, very scared. Probably more scared than a piece of software has any right to feel."
"Isn't that profound, Dan?"
"Save your profundities for later. I'm sure you'll get the opportunity."
"I imagine you feel insignificant," Sajaki said, almost as if he had been listening in on the conversation. "Well, you're justified in feeling that way. You are insignificant. That's the majesty of this place. Would you choose it any other way?"
The ground was rushing towards him, strewn with geometric rubble. The suit's proximity alarm began to chime, indicating the nearness of the floor. Less than a kilometer now, though it looked close enough to touch. He felt the suit begin to adjust itself around him, remolding itself for surface operation. 100 meters. They were descending towards a flattish crystal slab, presumably some chunk of the ceiling which had fallen all this way. It was the size of a small ballroom. He could see the blinding glare of his suit thrusters in a marbled surface.
"Cut your thrust 5 seconds before impact," Sajaki said. "We don't want the heat to trigger a defensive reaction."
"No," Sylvester said. "That's the last thing we want." He assumed the suit would protect him from the fall, though it took an effort of will to follow Sajaki's instructions, slipping into freefall 5 seconds before his feet were due to touch the crystal. The suit bulged slightly, projecting cushioning armor plates. The density of the gel air rose, and for a moment he almost blacked out. But when the impact came, it was almost too gentle to register. He blinked, and realized he had fallen on his back. Great, he thought, very dignified. Then the suit righted itself and popped him back on his feet. He was standing in Cerberus.